Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the PolyBytes podcast, bringing you bite-sized politics every week. The main news over the last week stayed being Djokovic in the Australian Open, punctuated only by the extreme staff shortages that were shutting down half the supply chains in the state and causing shortages in industries like supermarkets. Over the weekend, we saw the other Australian Open exemption holders voluntarily leave the country rather than deal with what Novak was going through, who remained locked up over last weekend in the same hotel as the refugees that are, in no uncertain terms, one of the greatest skeletons in Australia's closet. Over this weekend period while he was detained here, there were, as predicted, unintended consequences, where these refugees were given an international platform to talk about their experience of living in a place like that where, although Novak was only detained for a few days, some of them had been in detention for 9 years. Over the weekend as well, we saw crowds gather in support at the hotel and in the streets of freeing Novak and also gaining support for the refugees who were locked up there. As Monday hit, we got the case, even though it was plagued by a number of tech issues throughout the day, and what a case it was. Rapid fire arguments from Novak's team that after a later break in the afternoon, and we expected to hear the final arguments from the government, they realized they weren't going to win. And the judge handed down their ruling suddenly as being that Novak was not afforded due process or fairness and overturned the visa cancellation, which meant he got to walk free. There is some confusion that this had nothing to do with his exemption and was not actually why the visa got cancelled or why it got overturned. The media reporting over much of this has been pretty disappointing, except for a few standouts in the court reporters following the case itself. This confusion meant that the actual finding of the case was remarkably misrepresented, and the media loved trying to make it about the exemption process because, as we all know, nobody's allowed to survive COVID unless somebody made money in the process. One particular set of opinions on this went viral, with Seven News behind-the-scenes preparation footage before a live segment going viral. In this, the journalists called Novak an asshole, among other things. And interestingly, Channel 7 and the journos never really publicly commented on this, except to say they would be hunting down whoever leaked the footage. Speaking of the current COVID situation, in amongst the Omicron outbreak, we remain in a shortage of rapid tests, and there have been a few big moments over the last week. Victoria officially hit 51,000 cases when they started counting rapid tests from people being able to submit their positive results, but kind of failed to mention that the first day was actually accepting up to a week backdating of tests, which is one of the reasons that this spiked so high. This, of course, regardless, triggered a meltdown of epic proportions online from certain sections of the community, but realistically, the cases existed for that week whether people realized it or not, so you have to wonder if they have to be told to be concerned. Clearly, once they had that data, the government used it to justify new restrictions, again, shutting dance floors everywhere but weddings, introducing density limits, and including the booster in the vaccine mandate for key workers. Another ode to our media was that in the same presser, Foley announced that he expected the peak of this wave to hit weeks before the first booster deadline was even meant to occur. Once again, no questions got asked what the point of a mandate for a booster is after the major problem is passed. Not long after this, Dan Andrews returned from leave, and the government has now changed the isolation requirements for most necessary supply chain workers. Now, this is being reported as a reduction, but in reality, it means that there is no isolation required, whereby all staff have to do is return a negative rapid test daily in order to work for 5 days. The catch to this is the government has turned around and said that the businesses must source the N95s that close contacts are required to wear and the daily rapid tests for those close contact staff. Now, if you have, say, 10 staff that are close contacts, you manage to get rapid tests at only $10 each, you're looking at $500 a week for businesses just to stay open, even if none of your other staff are sick. Then, if any of those close contacts do get COVID, the entire cycle starts again as all those other staff are close contacts. Again, So businesses are looking at having to fork out hundreds and hundreds of dollars on rapid tests indefinitely every week, if they can even get them, just to try and stay open. There is no support being provided, whether it's for funding this or sourcing the tests. The government is once again demonstrating they are just making shit up on the fly with no idea what they're doing, and the rules have absolutely no basis in common sense or reality. However, the isolation requirements are causing havoc on businesses at the moment, with burger chain Burgatory coming out this week and saying that they had 260 of their 400 total staff currently with COVID or in isolation. It's caused such havoc they've been having to have their management teams jump on and flip burgers. Now, there are some comments online of saying, well, if it's so mild and we should let it rip, look at what's happening to the supply chain. But that's from the isolation requirements, nothing else. These people aren't dead or in hospital. They're sitting at home because the government told them to. So it's worth mentioning that if you're going to start talking about the difficulties with the choices that have been made, and no one is arguing that this is a complete dumpster fire of epic proportions, it's worth keeping in mind the facts. But narratives run wild at the moment. This week, Dan claimed that a booster will stop transmission without an example of where this has actually happened in the world. And of course, their mandates are coming in after the supposed peak of this wave. He also claimed a booster will cover you for the rest of the year, even though they've changed the dosage interval to 4 months. So how does something that lasts 4 months actually going to last 12 months? This is, once again, not addressed by the media. In news outside of Victoria, WA has had some incredible moments, including a cringy video of McGowan and an Indigenous elder that has been labelled remarkably racist by a number of people online, and if nothing else, in short, it's excruciatingly painful to watch, as well as changes to their mandates, with McGowan announcing some of the harshest in the country, because obviously he loves not being outdone, and this is about science, not politics, including shutting bottle shops to those who are unvaccinated. Now, no state has really done this. South Australia, I believe, attempted it briefly and quickly overturned it. So it'll be interesting to see if that one holds up. In Queensland, they have finally given up the pretense of administration and now have no border passes or test requirements to enter the state, but vaccine passes exist in certain businesses there still. As many people know, it was quite viral that Queensland for many weeks has not been having people at the airport in order to check these documentation anyway. As mentioned here, for many, many months, the concept of hard borders in a country like Australia is absolutely laughable and is not sustainable, particularly along the East Coast. WA seems to be doing their own thing. So we head into another week, an extended pandemic declaration, and waiting to hear the health advice this time on how they have justified keeping the mandates, when the main reason for them last time is Sutton claimed rapid antigen tests weren't a viable alternative option, and that's why they kept them. We also get to see if the AO gets to keep Novak, as the federal government continue to be relentless w**s and refuse to make a decision if they will deport a player that has now been rostered into the games. And finally, a mention to the changes that have been announced for 2022 for Voice of Victoria, which came out this week. As many people know, the actual content here will never change. I'm not sure I'd know how to, but there'll be plenty of growth, including the website with the ability to do blogs and articles, and a brand new YouTube channel coming for educational content, particularly around the upcoming elections this year. So if you want to help support this content and help it grow, there is a Patreon linked in this podcast where you can join monthly as a patron or even just a one-off. Patrons get bonus content and engagement, including asking questions of podcast guests, with our first one coming up being David Limbrick. Thank you all for listening. See you next week.